Welcome to the West Harlem Way Race Podcasts. I'm John Kinniston, and this is episode 80. I'm recording this latest episode on Tuesday, the 26th of May, 2015. So this year's West Harlem Way Race is now just 3 weeks and 4 days away. So hopefully if you're preparing for this year's race, you're feeling in good form. Maybe you just got another week or so or 2 weeks of harder training, and then you'll be tapering down before the race. This past weekend was the training weekend at By the Way in Tyndrum. From what I could gather, I think it was a great weekend and everyone had a really good time. Certainly the weather was pretty good, especially on the Saturday. Not quite sure what Sunday was like, but certainly the main run on the Saturday, I'm sure you had a great time. We weren't able to make it this time, but Ian did ask me, could I do a quiz for the West Harlem for the West Harlem Way training weekend? So I did that, and I thought it'd be quite fun actually just to put it onto this podcast. So that'll be the first item after the intro, which is a quiz, and I'll explain a bit more about that as we get there. Maybe that you need a pen and paper to write your answers down, or if you're out running, then maybe you'll just do it in your head anyway. And I think I'll put the answers on the Facebook page and the website in a week or so. So I'll give you a chance to see if you can get as many points as you can on that one. For me, I did the Kettering Trail just over a week ago, and it was really good to do an ultra in Scotland. Last year, I did the Hardmoor Series and then a race in the Lake District, so I never actually did any ultras in Scotland last year. So it was great to be back with a familiar crowd. And I did the Kettering Trail in 2010, and so it was really nice to be back and enjoy the route, and had a good run and enjoyed it. So it was great to see everybody. Especially good to see Richie Cunningham back on the ultra scene after having a little bit of time off over the last year from running ultras with his young family. So it was great to see him back, and not only back but winning the race as well. So well done to Richie. And so, we've got just over 3 weeks to go for the West Harlem Way Race. Ian has sent out the final instructions. So hopefully you've read those thoroughly, and there's various things that you need to do, kit that if you want to order, and also particularly your support team. There's a link to a website that you need to fill in all your support details. So hopefully that is on the way. So few weeks to go, and looking forward to the 2015 version of the West Harlem Way Race. For this podcast, there's going to be three items. I say the first one will be a quiz, which I did for the weekend, and hopefully you'll have a bit of fun answering that as you're out running, or maybe you want to sit down and with a pen and paper, I say, and write down your answers and then check them later. And then the second item will be Marco's final training tips. This year, Marco's been helping me, and we did all these in one go, actually, to be in January time, and then I've cut it into four pieces. So this is the fourth one, and in this episode, Marco talks a bit about tapering, and which is hopefully pretty relevant for these last few weeks, and then also night runs on the West Harlem Way, and we discussed a little bit about the value of having a night run. The race starts at 1 a.m, so you start in the night. Is it worth doing a run in the dark and getting used to that? And we discuss that a little bit as well. And then the third item will be my interview with Rick. I plan to speak to Rick on Thursday. And sadly, Rick's had to pull out of the race. The injury that he talked about in the last podcast has flared up really and hasn't really gone away. So I'll talk to Rick. I don't think he was particularly keen in a sense to go over it, but I think it's right to do that, because Ian sends me all the people that are having to withdraw from the West Harlem Way Race, and almost daily now there's people, the numbers are coming down quite rapidly over the last few weeks, mainly with people being injured and knowing they just won't be able to get the training in to be able to do the race justice. So I thought it'd be good just to chat to Rick and talk to him about his process and how that's worked out. And then the final podcast I'll do, probably be the last one before the race, I'll catch up with the other three that we've been following, with Rona, Annette and Alan, and get their final thoughts as they prepare for the race in a few weeks' time. So hope you enjoy this episode. Say the quiz, Marco's training tips, and then my interview with Rick. Okay, welcome to the West Harlem Way race quiz. There's 30 questions to answer, and I've put them into five rounds of six questions each. Most of them, well, pretty well all of them, are worth 2 marks each, and just the last one is worth three, and one and three, the last two. But the first round is all about the history of the race. The next round is about questions about the route. The third round are questions about the records of the race. Question four, round four, questions about the race podcasts. And round five is a miscellaneous questions. So as I say, if you're out running, you'll have to just do this in your head. If you're sat down somewhere and you want to write your answers down, then you can do that. And we'll be able to, I'll put the answers on Facebook in a week or so's time. So you can check your answers against what I've got down. Okay, so this is round one. Questions about the history of the race. Question one, name the two runners who ran the first West Highland Way race. Question two, how many years did the late Dario Malaragni direct the race? Question three, how many West Highland Way races have been run up until 2014? Question four, in what year did the clash of the titans between Dave Wallace and Mike Hartley take place? Question five, who is the oldest finisher of the race and how old was he? And there's 1 point for each of those. And question six, who is the youngest finisher of the race and how old was he? Okay, I'm not quite sure how this will work in the sense of whether that was too quick. So I'll just go through those six questions again. And if you didn't quite get them, you'd be able to have another go. Question one, name the two runners who ran the West Harlem Way race. Question two, how many years did the late Dario Malaragni direct the race? Question three, how many West Harlem Way races have been run up until 2014? Question four, in what year did the clash of the titans between Dave Wallace and Mike Hartley take place? Question five, who is the oldest finisher of the race and how old was he? 1 point for each. And six, question six, who is the youngest finisher of the race and how old was he? All these questions, actually, all the answers can be found on the West Harlem Way race. Particularly, I think this section, all these questions, the answers I've got, questions and answers got from the history tab. So if you want to find your own answers, then that's the place to look. Okay, round two is questions about the route. And again, most of these you'll be able to get from the website. Question one in this round, what is the next checkpoint after Rowadennan? Question two, what marks the halfway point in the race? Question three, after which checkpoint would you expect to find Murdo and his famous Jelly Baby Hill? Question four, according to the race information on the race website, how far is it from Glencoe Ski Lodge to Kinloch Leven? Question five, where is the Bar Bridge? And question six, where is the finish of the race? Okay, each of those are worth 2 points. Again, I'll just go through those. Some of them are pretty easy, hopefully, and one or two might be a little bit harder. So round two, questions about the route. Question one, what is the next checkpoint after Rowadennan? Question two, what marks the halfway point in the race? Question three, after which checkpoint would you expect to find Murdo and his famous Jelly Baby Hill? Question four, According to the race information on the race website, how far is it from Glencoe Ski Lodge to Kinloch Leven? Question 5, where is the Bar Bridge? And question 6, where is the finish of the race? Okay, round 3 is questions about the records of the race. Question 1 of round 3. How many people have completed 10 or more West Harlem Way races? Question 2. Who holds the men's record and what was his time? And there's 1 point for each for that. And question 3. Who holds the women's record and what was her time? Again, 1 point for each. Question 4. How many races has our race director, Ian Beattie, started and how many has he finished? And there's 1 point for each, because they're not the same. Question 5. How many people have completed at least one West Harlem Way race? And question 6. What is the fastest time for those who have only run one West Harlem Way race? Okay, so round 3, questions about the records of the race. Question 1, how many people have completed 10 or more West Harlem Way races? Who holds the men's record and what was his time? Who holds the women's record and what was her time? Question 4, how many races has our race director Ian Beattie started and how many has he finished? Question 5, how many people have completed at least one West Harlem Way race? And question 6, what is the fastest time for those who have only run one West Harlem Way race? Okay, round 4. These are questions about the race podcasts. I thought I must put a section about the podcast in there. Okay, 6 questions. Question 1, what month and year was the first podcast published? 1 point for each, one for the month and one for the year. Question 2, who is behind the feature Piratical Ramblings? Question 3. Name the 4 runners the podcast is following this year as they run their first West Harlem Way race. That'll be half mark for each. Question 4. In episode 67, which 2 people guest hosted the show interviewing myself and Katrina? Question 5. In 2014, who shared their training tips on a regular basis? And question 6. How many episodes have been published so far? And that's before this one. Okay, so questions about the podcasts. Question 1. What month and year was the first podcast published? Question 2. Who is behind the feature Piratical Ramblings? Question 3. Name the 4 runners the podcast is following this year as they run their first West Harlem Way race. Half a mark for each. Question 4. In episode 67, which 2 people guest hosted the show interviewing myself and Katrina Kinniston? Question 5. In 2014, who shared their training tips on a regular basis? And question 6. How many episodes have been published so far? Okay, last round, round 5. This is miscellaneous questions. Question 1. Which runner has her number and the West Harlem Way symbol tattooed on her ankle? Question 2. Which runner ran the 2008 race while 2 months pregnant? Question 3. In which year was the DVD Closing Distance made? Question 4. In which year did the adventure show cover the race? Question 5. What is presented to every finisher of the West Harlem Way? And there's just 1 point for that one. Everybody should know that one. And question 6. What 3 distinctive engravings are on each goblet? And there's a point for each of those. So it's 3 points of that one. So, miscellaneous questions. Which runner has a number and the West Harlem Way symbol tattooed on her ankle? Question two, which runner ran the 2008 race while 2 months pregnant? Question three, in which year was the DVD Closing Distance made? Question four, in which year did the adventure show cover the race? Question five, what is presented to every finisher of the West Harlem Way? One mark. And six, what three distinctive engravings are on each goblet? Okay, so there was 30 questions. There were 2 points each, so it's out of 60. And hope you enjoyed that. And it's got as many right as you could. And I say, I'll put the answers on the website in a week or so, so you can have a check and see how many you got right. So well done if you've taken part in our little quiz. For our final chat with Marco for Thinking About Training, and thanks for your contribution over these last few episodes, Marco.
No worries.
And we're just going to think about two areas tonight, and the first one is night runs for the West Harlem Way. Obviously, the race starts at 1 in the morning, and it gets light around about 3:30, 4 o'clock. So those that are finishing under 21, 22 hours will just have that little bit of dark. Obviously, those that take over 22 hours will go into a second night. But just thinking about preparing for the West Harlem Way and running through the night, would you suggest people have a little trial a few weeks before and get out there at 1 in the morning and run for a few hours in the dark? What are your thoughts on that?
Definitely not. I did do that 1 year, and I was so tired for a week because it totally messed up my sleeping pattern. Mm. So if I was practicing, I would do it now in the winter. Mm. I'd get my head torch. I would make sure I was happy with my head torch, and I would do that now. I would go in the sections that you need to do if you're able to, or just get used to running with a head torch. Mm. Do it now. You can do it at 5 o'clock and it doesn't mess up your sleeping pattern. Getting up at 10 o'clock to do a 25-mile run was a nightmare for me. I was so tired. I think I went to work the next day after that and fell asleep in a meeting. I think especially in May, when really should be your high mileage that you're doing, I think just doing anything different just messes up your pattern, your consistency. So for me personally, I wouldn't do it in May, I would do it now.
Right, okay. And so that sort of practice of being up through the night, is that, you wouldn't necessarily practice that, you just...
No, I wouldn't practice it, no. Yeah. No. I do find the West Ham Way very hard to start at 1 o'clock. I find it hard on my stomach is the problem. I always get the runs in the West Ham Way in the first few hours, and I don't know where I don't even eat anything that's different during the day. You know, I don't eat during a taper. I have, especially what I do works for every race, but the West Ham Way, having to start eating at 1 in the morning,
yeah,
and you're going on to sugars or forcing yourself to eat, it just doesn't work for me. So I can never really do that in training because I don't get affected by that kind of thing. So, no other race have I ever decided it's a good idea to run during the night, because when it comes to the actual race, the adrenaline and everything keeps you awake, and you know you're going to be high as a kite at 1 o'clock in the morning when you start a Mogai. So the first night you'll be fine. The second night might be harder. But how do you replicate that in training?
Mm,
you can't without doing it.
Yeah,
so,
just as an aside, have you got a preference? Because I know with the Lakeland race that we're both doing this year, that starts at 5 o'clock at night, doesn't it?
Six.
Yeah. So we get, you know, 4 hours of light, and then you're into the dark. For the likes of you, you're finished in the light, but the rest of us might go into a second night. But is that a preference? Or no, when I did the Hogmores 110 last year, that started at 8 in the morning. And I actually quite like that, because you've got a whole day of light, and then you have just one night, and then you finish in the light. So have you got a preference from the races you've done?
I didn't mind the 6 o'clock. That was quite good, because you were right into the race before it got dark. You know, And the section you got, so you had one kind of, had one big hill off road in the dark, but then after that it was quite flat and it wasn't too bad. But yeah, I think if it, out of any times, I would prefer Morningstar of all of them.
Yeah.
But I know that that's hard to work for everybody, isn't it?
But if you're doing your 24-hour races, they tend to start at midday, don't they?
The Worlds this year is 10 o'clock. But is it? Between 10 and 12, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Right.
So, yeah, you get a full day. And
yeah. And they're floodlit, aren't they?
They're normally floodlit, yeah. So, so you don't even need a head torch.
That's right.
Have you seen these new head torches? You may as well floodlight.
That's right. Yeah, very good. Okay, we just touched a little bit there about taper,
mm-hmm.
and that's, I remember the first year I did the West Highland Way, I just thought, you know, I did a 2-week taper, whatever it was, and I just thought, I've lost all my fitness, and I really panicked.
Yeah.
I thought I've worked so hard to get to this point, and then I just felt so sluggish every time I went out, and I thought, oh, I've just lost it all. So what are your thoughts about tapering and how to cope with that?
The last problem, I think, when I first started tapering, was I tapered everything. You tapered speed, you tapered distance, so you just felt lethargic. Because you also decided it was a great idea to eat more as well. I've got to eat, got to eat. So I tend to now actually eat less, because you don't need as much, because you're tapering. Don't get me wrong, you need enough for the race, but there's no point in, you've been doing those miles in training, you know. So, but one thing I noticed, I found that definitely got rid of that lethargic feeling, was doing some speed during the taper. So I only taper the distance now, and I will do speed work.
Nice.
Even if it's, and I actually probably do more speed work in the last few weeks coming up to a race than I do on the build-up. I did read somewhere that the benefits of speed work only really lasts 8 weeks or something, or 6 to 8 weeks. So if you do speed work, you only get the benefits for 6 to 8 weeks anyway.
Mm.
So doing it towards the end always kind of made more sense to me, that you would get the benefits from it. I also do more hills as well, because, well, especially for a flat race, for a hilly race, I would do maybe more hills in the last 6 weeks. You know, I'd be more flatter and then do more hills in the last 6 weeks. West Ham Way, I would, the 4 weeks before, I'd probably do some West Ham Way runs. 6, 5, and 4 weeks before, I would do West Ham Way runs, and then the taper, I would actually do speed work. Yeah, I would do, and it doesn't even need to be hard speed work. It can be, a favourite of mine is just 10 times 1 minute. I do that probably in a race week, actually. So on the Tuesday before the race, I'll go out, and it'll never be pushing, but I'll do 10 times 1 minute on, 1 minute off.
Right.
And that loosens everyone up, because you know yourself, you, just like you were talking about, you feel lethargic. And I always find that with 1 minute efforts, even if you make a mess of it and go too fast, you're not going to do any damage.
So in that, in those 2, 3 weeks before, would you cut down the amount of runs? You're averaging about six days a week at least, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. Six or seven, yeah.
Yeah, just one day off. Would you cut that down and have a few more days off?
Yeah, definitely. I would. So you'd have your big long hard week. Then the week after that, I would probably start to cut one of the double runs, probably, and then I would do the weekend. I would do 20-20. So. And 2020 is my kind of base. So that's me back to kind of a base. But I'd still run every day. I would actually go from probably running 5 or 6 days on the biggest week, but 100 and odd miles, 110, 120 miles, to actually running the first week of taper, running more days, but only about 80 miles.
Only 80.
When you've done 120, only 80.
I
feels imagine, only 80.
Yes,
so, you know, 70, 80 miles. The following week, I would drop it to 40 miles. So, and that would be probably a 10 and an 8 the week before the race. Definitely 10 and 8. I have the same two routes I do with 10 and 8 all the time. I'd probably take Friday off. This is the week before, not the week of the race.
All right.
So I'd take Friday off, run 10 and 8. Then we'd probably run Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, but just 5 each day. And then probably take Thursday, Friday off and then run the race Friday night, Saturday morning.
And your whole aim is to try and get to the start line ready to go and as fresh as you can, isn't it?
The biggest thing, it doesn't, you know, is getting to that start line fresh. And I bet there's 50% of people there are tired already.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not sure about those numbers, but I definitely when I first started West Ham Way, I think I was peaking in April.
Yeah.
You know, I was going training runs with you and I was like, where's John? Beat up at the pub. Jeez, he's hours behind just to have you beat me in the actual race every time. So, you know, I was peaking in April. You were peaking in June. So it's definitely easy done. And I think it is easy done if you start training in November for one race.
Yeah. Great. Well, thank you very much, Marco. Really appreciate your time over this last few weeks on these podcasts and sharing some of your thoughts with us. And we'll find out more about how you get on this year.
Hopefully it's helped everybody. So it's just my thoughts. Training is personal. So take a bit of what you learn from everyone and form your own training because everyone's unique, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Thank you.
No worries.
Okay, for our interview tonight, we've got Rick Williams. This is our fourth one that we've done. And I must admit, we're both doing it with a slightly heavy heart because this wasn't quite the outcome that either of us were hoping to do for this last one. Over the last few weeks, I get notification of people who have to withdraw from the race because for the website, and Ian passes them on to me. And there's been a steady stream of people over the last few weeks. Even tonight, I had two more. Of people who are injured and just not been able to get the training done and have had to withdraw. And sadly, Rick is one of those. Those who listened to the podcast last time, it was 3 or 4 weeks ago, would know that things hadn't gone very well after the fling where he had a great run. So sadly, Rick's had to withdraw from the race this year. And I thought, even though it'd be easier just to not do this one, I thought it would be good just to chat about it, and because there are lots of others in the same situation. So thanks for being willing to speak to us tonight, Rick. And maybe you can just tell us what the process was from when we last spoke at the last podcast.
Yeah, okay. Well, as I say, I really do hope that what I have to say is helpful. But I think when we last spoke, I'd just run the fling, and my sort of right leg especially pretty much gave way after that. I didn't feel any pain. I didn't have any niggles during the fling itself, which is a bit unfortunate, I suppose, because I think if I'd had a niggle or any kind of pain, I would have pulled out, and then perhaps, you know, my right leg wouldn't have been as sore as it was, and perhaps I'd be back running and possibly even running the West Highland Way race. But you know, it was very sore afterwards. It just wasn't getting better. And I think I mentioned in the last podcast that I think I'd planned to go and see a physio at that time. I hadn't seen a physio. So I went to see a physio, you know, privately. I must say I've had some sort of strange experiences with physios over the last few weeks. I'd never been to see a physio before, so I didn't really know what to expect. Anyway, this person that I went to see, she seemed to sort of know straight away or seemed to know straight away what the problem was. And she spoke about a misalignment on the left side of the body that was the right side to compensate. And that was the reason why I was having the problems that I was having. And she did quite a bit of manipulation strangely and sort of happily in a way, she said at the end of that session, right, you know, you're cured. Whatever the problem was, whatever was causing the problem, I've now rectified. And apart from the fact that you've got a sort of a weakish core, in other words, you know, my core, she said, wasn't able to sort of support the amount of running that I was doing. She said, give it a week of rest, and after that, just build back up to your normal running routine, and you should be fine. So obviously, you know, I left that sort of session fairly optimistic, because I thought, well, if I can get back after a week, and build up slowly, then I may just be able to do the West Highland Way race. So after a week, I started running again, and I didn't get, you know, beyond half a mile, and my right leg was in pain again. So I left it, I came home, went out again the next day, had a similar problem, just couldn't run more than half a mile, leg was sort of in pain. I mean, it was, I mean, to be fair to this physio, I'd had a sort of ache in my glute region, as well as a pain from my knee down, and the pain in the ache region had sort of gone, you know, that had gone. So perhaps, you know, to give her credit, perhaps she did, you know, do something that was well worthwhile. But I certainly wasn't running again. Anyway, I went back to her and said, look, you know, I still can't run. You said that, you know, I should be okay after a week to start some light running. And she came back and gave me a rather odd reply and said, look, don't do any running until you've built up your core, until you've done the exercises that I gave, you know, that I gave to you. And you've got a weak core, and she spoke about dynamic hip strength and this, that, and the other. And I think, to some extent, part of what she says is true. You know, my core may not be as strong as it should be to support the amount of running that, you know, that I was doing. I was doing, what, 80-odd miles a week? And so perhaps there's some truth in that. But not to do any running at all until my core was much stronger. That seemed a bit odd, and actually was different to what she'd said, you know, when I was with her.
And was there a time frame in that? How long it would take for your core to...
Well, she reckoned that, I mean, she said, you know, it varies, but 3 or 4 months should see your core, you know, my core, sort of stronger, a lot stronger than it is.
So not to, I mean, run for 3 months?
Well, I mean, that's essentially what she was then saying in an email. So initially she was saying, leave it a week and do your core exercises, run a few times and build it all up gradually and you should be fine. But then she seemed to sort of change her tune a little bit and was saying, look, no running at all. Do your core exercises. You're okay to swim. You're okay to cycle. But, you know, you could well experience this problem until your core is a lot stronger. And it just didn't sort of seem to make sense to me. You know, it just didn't seem to, you know, just didn't seem right. So I went to see another physio and again paid to go and see this physio. I phoned her up first and said, look, I've been to see a physio. This was the diagnosis. I don't want to sort of come to you and, you know, and expect a cure. But on the other hand, do you think that what I've been told is right? And she said, no, I don't. You know, you come and see me. You come and see me. And again, she seemed completely genuine. And I'm sure, you know, she was trying to do her best. So I went to see her last week. And she said, well, I don't think it's what the other one said it is. I think you overpronate. And I said, well, I hear what you're saying, you're the professional, but, you know, I've been running now for 6 or 7 years like this. I haven't changed anything as such, and I've never had any problems. And she said, well, these things happen. Well, you know, I didn't really want to say to her there and then, look, I'm not, you know, taking this advice. I don't really think what you're saying is true. She said, I'll take your feet, and I'll take them so that it's as though you're wearing an insert, you know, in your shoe. So instead of wearing an orthotic insert, I'll tape your feet, see what you like with that, and if that cures the problem, then you know that, you know, you need inserts, you know that you overpronate and that's your problem and so on. Because I was having pain in my knee was throbbing, my right leg was throbbing, my ankle was throbbing, and it just didn't seem right at all. You know, it wasn't... Well, it's not a fracture or anything like that. So anyway, the next day I went for a run, and I was in agony after that run.
Is that with your feet taped?
That was with my feet taped. And strangely enough, I mean, she taped both feet. And my left leg was fine. You know, it felt absolutely fine, as it always has done. My right leg, my ankle was in agony, and it just didn't feel right at all. And in fact, that night, I couldn't get to sleep. I had to have painkillers. I took the tape off, and I emailed her back, and I said, look, I just don't think that's the solution. So I then discovered that there's a, I mean, some of your listeners may know of a guy called Frank Glasgow. He's a physio. I ran with him in the Clyde Stride, actually. We ran side by side for a while, and we both did a run last September on the Isle of Cumbrae. So I didn't know that Frank was a physio. I just looked on the internet, found that I was looking for a physio in Glasgow, actually. And found Frank's details, spoke to Frank, who was very helpful, and he said, look, the sad fact is that you could go to 10 physios and they would all give you different advice, and it may well be that all you need to do is just not do any running and just let your leg rest and just leave the, you know, the physios to one side. You know, he didn't think it was overpronation. He thought it may not be anything to do with this misalignment problem, but the bottom line was just rest it and see how you get on. And that's all I can do really at the moment. I don't think a physio is going to get to the bottom of what the problem is. And it may be just a case of resting it and just leaving it. So that was, I saw this physio, I saw the second one about a week ago. So I haven't done any running since then. And I think I might just try and go for half a mile tomorrow and see what happens. So that's where we're at the moment. And obviously because of that, you know, with a very, very heavy heart, I pulled out of the West Highland Way race.
There was no real choice, was there, though?
There wasn't, no. And I really don't think that, you know, I don't think I could have managed it. And I sort of knew 2 or 3 weeks ago, really, that I wasn't going to have the kind of race that I originally envisaged. So I really knew, well, I've known for 2 or 3 weeks that I was going to pull out. But I kept delaying it. and what I didn't really, well, what I'd forgotten was, of course, that unlike other races, you actually get a refund. And you kindly mentioned that or reminded me of that in an email. And I knew that I had to withdraw by the end of May to get that refund. And I kept putting it off. But eventually I did it a few days ago, I think, and pulled out. And but there we are. I actually never thought it would happen to me. I thought my training had been sensible. And okay, I mean, some people listening to this might think, what, 80 miles a week? You know, 85 miles a week, and I'm 48 years old, and I'm sure there are some people out there that are saying, well, that's far too much. And you know, that may well be right. And it may well be that had I done 70 miles a week and did some strength training and some other cross training, perhaps I wouldn't be in the position that I'm in now. But, you know, you learn these things by experience.
Yeah.
And you and I were talking. I mean, we talked about many things when we ran in the lakes. And I remember saying to you, and I've said to one or two other people, you know, for me it's an experiment, and I enjoy going out every day running. And you and I both agreed that, you know, the races are the icing on the cake, and we enjoy just going out running every day or as many days as we can. And we enjoy going out on the trails, we enjoy going out on the roads and that kind of thing. And I just really enjoyed, and I didn't find running 80 odd miles a week a problem. You know, as long as I ran at a sensible pace, you know, I was able to run that sort of distance, I thought, without any problem at all. But once I get back running, I may well need to readjust that. Yeah, and just see.
Yeah. Okay, so in the meantime, what else have you been doing to try and keep the sort of level of fitness up?
Yeah, the first physio said cycling absolutely isn't a problem. And I pretty much knew that already. So I've been out on my bike pretty much every day since about a week after the fling. You know, really enjoying the bike at the moment. Up until about, you know, a month ago, I hadn't been on my bike at all this year. And
is this on road or off road or
On road? Yeah, on road. So doing what? Well, doing a minimum of 20 miles a day, but 30 miles, 40 miles, 50 miles, about that sort of distance. I can't really get out of the house, you know, for any more than 2 or 3 hours at the moment. But I'm really, really enjoying that. And I don't know, I'm sure it's helping in some way. You know, I'm sure it's obviously help. I mean, I'm just enjoying being out on the roads and just enjoying cycling.
And there's no pain at all while you cycle?
No, none at all. And then I've also discovered pool running, which I didn't know anything about pool running before. So as I was saying to you before, I mean, I hate swimming. About 4 years ago, I decided to do an Ironman. And my biggest, weakest link, if you like, if that makes sense, was the swimming. You know, I could hardly swim a length. And, you know, I knew that if I was going to do an Ironman, I would have to swim, obviously. You know, what is it, 2.4 miles, I think. So I did loads of pool swimming and actually got reasonably, well, I was okay. But I hated going to the pool. So when I found out that pool running is actually a good way of recovering, you know, from an injury, I bought an Aquabelt from the internet. And went for the first time on Tuesday, and watched lots of YouTube videos beforehand just to see how to do it, and read lots as well. And it was quite interesting, quite novel. And thankfully, there weren't too many people in the pool seeing me, watching me running up and down the pool, as it were. So I'm going back there tonight, and I'll hopefully do that 2 or 3 times a week.
Good.
I mean, I don't know what many people, you know, many of your sort of listeners, you know, over and over again, and I said this in previous podcasts, I'd always meant at the beginning of this training period for the West Highland Way, I'd always meant to do some strength training, you know, some conditioning work, some core exercises, because I'd read how important that was, especially, you know, for people of our age. I just never got round to it because I found that, you know, I went to one session at the local gym and I was so sore afterwards. I couldn't run the next day and I thought I'd much rather run. But as I say, perhaps had I scaled it back a bit and run 70 miles a week and not run, you know, one day a week and on that day either rested completely or, you know, did a bit of core exercises, perhaps I wouldn't be in this position, but there we are.
It's difficult though, isn't it, Rick? It could be that this injury, with a bit of rest, goes and never comes back.
Yeah, exactly.
And it could be just one of those things that happen, whether you ran 40 miles a week or 80 miles a week.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's difficult to know, really.
I think, again, looking back, had the fling not been when it was, perhaps... you know, what would have happened was I would have sort of tested it out, the injury that I had before the fling, which was only very minor. You know, I would have sort of just tested it out a bit, and had the fling perhaps been 3 or 4 weeks later, then, you know, it might have been a different story. But because it was pretty much the week after I had this niggle, you know, and I really wanted to run the fling, and, you know, Frank was saying that, you know, the amount of adrenaline that's going through your body, I just didn't feel any pain at all on the day. And that may well have just been, you know, the adrenaline. It may well have been just me wanting to have a good run, and that resulted in all the pain just disappearing. And then as soon as I finished, you know, it all comes back. But there we are. But I've got the Lakeland 50 to look forward to.
Right. I was going to ask that. So is that still going to still be on the horizon?
Well, I mean, it's about 6 weeks away.
No, it's more than that. That's more than
sorry.
That. Yeah.
No,
eight. Eight or nine.
Yeah, eight. I think.
Be eight this Saturday. There was 10 weeks between the Caterham and that one for me. So
that's right. Yeah. No. What I was thinking was if by the end of this week I can start back very slowly, then I may just make the Lakeland 50. But you know, again, you know, all these thoughts go through your mind. You think you're losing so much fitness, and I'm sure I have lost some fitness. I mean, I've got to have lost some fitness. But you don't know how much you've lost, do you?
And also, I think you it won't take you long to get it back. You know, it's not as if you don't run for 4 weeks, you don't go back to zero. Go back. You go down a little bit, and within 2 or 3 weeks, you'll be flying again.
You've given me various promises over the last.
I know I have. Yeah.
No, I mean. I would love to have a good race at the Lakeland 50. And as you say, I mean, these things, it's very hard to win fitness, isn't it? It's very hard to achieve a certain level of fit or any fitness at all. But it's very easily lost, isn't it? You know, it's not long before you lose some fitness, but hopefully it'll come back fairly quickly. And I would love to do the Lakeland 50 and run it well. And again, I said last time, the beauty of having races on the horizon is that it can kind of... I mean, I've not put the West Highland Way to the back of my mind. I have in a way, because I think, well, you know, I just need to, in a way, forget about the West Highland Way now. You know, there's no point in, you know, getting really disappointed about the fact that I can't run it. I've withdrawn. I can't run. I know that I can't run it. I can't run it well. I just need to look forward now to the next race and just try and concentrate on that.
Yeah, and it will be there next year and the year after. You know, it's not as if... I know it feels now, you know, you've been building up to this one, but I say it will be there next year.
Well, that's good to know.
And that's a promise. That's a promise I can't...
That's a definite promise.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I always like to have plans. I'd like to beat Surrey Marathon, because I really enjoy running on the road as well as running on the trails. And I'd like to run a sub-3 marathon. And I'd sort of picked next April as being, you know, I'm going to start. The plan was run the West Highland Way race, do a few recovery runs, run the Lakeland 50 as a bit of a, on the back of the fitness, you know, from the West Highland Way race. I was then planning on having a few easy months, sort of August, September, and then starting some, you know, fairly serious marathon training in October. So that would take me up to next April, and I didn't have any plans for the rest of next year. And perhaps now I need to think about the West Highland Way race, not next year, but the year after that. So if I can have a deferral. No, I'll apply like everybody else and see if I can get in.
That's right. Good. Just finally then, as you look back on this time then, you picked out a few things there that you may have done differently. Is there anything else, any major things that you would say what you've learned from this experience that you would take into the future?
Well, before I started training for the West Highland Way race, I thought about employing a coach. I won't mention his name. Well-known ultra runner, well-known race. And we didn't actually. I mean, I emailed him, and we exchanged a few emails. And in the end, I just decided not to do it. And it may well be that had I used that person, he may well have said, "Look, you know, to get you to the start line in the very best shape, you need to do A, B, and C," and that may well have included some strengthening work. It may have included some cross training, like cycling or swimming. And it's difficult to know whether, you know, whether running on its own is going to get me to the start line on its best, get me to the start line of any race in the best possible shape, or whether you do need to introduce some cross-training. Historically, I've never really cross-trained. But I've read so much recently, you know, so many podcasts I've listened to, so much on the internet that I've read, you know, that really does encourage cross-training. And perhaps I need to explore that a bit more. You know, rather than running 7 days a week, you know, every week of every month and so on, perhaps I need to scale some of those miles back. Or even, you know, not run on a particular day and cycle or pool run, as well as fitting in some strengthening work. And you know, that may well be the answer. It may well be the answer. So I think that's what I would... I think that's what I'm thinking about going forward. And already, you know, I've bought a really good book that gives you lots of exercises, and I've sort of mapped out a routine. And I've started doing some of that, and we'll see if it helps.
Yeah. Good. Well, we wish you all the best, Rick, and I really hope that, you know, with a little bit of rest and very quickly you will be back, and hopefully it will be pain-free and you'll be ready for the Lakeland 50. And I can imagine me, where might it be when you go flying past me when I'm doing the 100, and you'll catch me and you'll be a big smile on your face and you'll be zooming in. That'll be great.
Well... If I've got a big smile on my face, I really hope that you've got one on yours as well.
Yeah, I hope so too. Good.
And what I also really hope is that everybody that reaches the start line of the West Highland Way race has an absolutely fantastic run. Because, in a sense, you know, it's a big achievement just getting to the start line, isn't it?
I know, that's right.
And unless you've run it many times in the past, or unless you've been running for many, many years, I mean, which I haven't, unless you've got a well-planned, well-thought-out formula that works and has always worked, then, you know, it's a risk for many people, isn't it?
It is.
You know, and the people that are pulling out of the West Highland Way race, I'm sure they've not been silly. You know, I'm sure they've not been stupid with their training. I'm sure they thought it was sensible. And it's just one of those things, isn't it? But I really do hope that everyone that toes the line has a great race.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for that. I know that you need to go soon for your pool run, so you're off soon, aren't you, for a little run in the pool.
That's right, yeah.
Hope you enjoy that. And I say we'll see you around, and we'll get you back on when you enter again.
Yeah, many thanks, John. Yeah. And okay. Thanks for inviting me to participate in these podcasts.
Yep. No, I've enjoyed chatting with you. It's been good. Yep. I just wish it was a better outcome for you.
Oh, well, it's one of those things. Many thanks, John.
Okay, thanks.
See you now. Bye.
Hope you've enjoyed this latest West Highland Way Race podcast. And there will be one more before the race, or at least one more before the race, where I'll catch up with the other three runners that we're following, with Alan, Annette and with Rona, and see how they're getting on. And then during the race itself, I might try and do a bit of a podcast as well, like I did last year, and do little snippets throughout the race. I'll be on the support. This time my role is to follow up in a car, basically sweeping up and picking up all the chips for those that don't complete the race. Anyway, we'll see how that goes on the day and the weekend. So I hope your training continues to go well over these next few weeks, that you're pretty sensible with your tapering and you're feeling strong and good and can get to that start line feeling ready to attack and to have a great race this year. Okay, so thanks for listening. And I'm just going to finish once again with a little quote from Wombat Fitness. And this one is from Howard Schultz. And he says this: "It's seizing the day and accepting responsibility for your future. It's seeing what other people don't see and pursuing that vision no matter who tells you not to."